Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Bald Move Prestige. Today, we're talking about the 2019 musical biopic, Rocket Man. It's the it's about the life and music of Sir Elton John. It's directed by Dexter Fletcher, who you may recall replaced Bryan Singer as the director of Bohemian Rhapsody when all that shit stuff went to shit. It's written by Lee Hall, who's a famous English playwright, television writer, screenwriter, and lyricist. Unfortunately, I'm not really familiar with all the stuff he's done, but he did do Rocket Man. It stars Taron Egerton as Elton John. You will remember him from the Kingsman series, the young punk from the Kingsman series. Jamie Bell, who I've seen in a bunch of stuff, including King Kong, Jumper, most recently in Snowpiercer, as his lifelong writing partner. Richard Madden, Rob Stark himself, plays his longtime business manager / lover. Bryce Dallas Howard plays Elton's mom. You know, we've seen her in Jurassic World, Pete's Dragon. She was once upon a time Gwen Stacy from Spider-Man 3. And finally, Stephen Graham as his original manager, Dick James, who you'll remember was a really good Al Capone back in Boardwalk Empire. This was essentially personally approved of, overseen by, and blessed by Elton John, who, by all accounts, was thrilled with the way it turned out. Felt like it did a good job of his showing his highs and his lows while still being kind of inspirational. A more deliberately mythologized, I think, biopic than most, or at least, purporting to be 100% true literal history. I mean, at one point, Elton John makes a crowd levitate. I don't think that really happened. Maybe I wasn't there. What did you think of Rocket Man, Jim?
I was underwhelmed by Rocket Man, unfortunately. I guess maybe I had some expectations based on the person or the persona of Elton John, that this movie would be more fun, that this movie would have some lighthearted moments in it. And aside from the levitating of the crowd, I have a hard time identifying any just purely fun moments in this movie.
Man, because that's like one of the big... I thought for most of this film's running time, it was a lot of fun in the way that jukebox musicals always are. Like, this is such, like, you know... The first two thirds, I think, of this film is very fun. And then it inevitably goes into the alcohol and the drugs and the depression and the partying and the lovers.
But it starts with that. It starts with his shitty childhood.
I felt like he was that. So I don't know. This is part of like why I reflected on, because we both talked about like, hey, you want to do Rocket Man? We missed that. Rocket Man, actually, I don't know if you can tell behind my porg, but. I got all these movie posters in my background behind my bookcase, and Rocket Man is one of the big ones because we wanted to see that. I can't remember why we didn't, why that week it didn't work out. But I like seeing musical biopics. I really enjoy them. And I was trying to figure out why. When I was watching this, I'm thinking like, you know, these are one of the few like really crystallized modern kind of American dream stories. People that come from humble backgrounds that overcome adversity and odds to be like these unique individuals and make it just through sheer talent and grit. And it's a very nice encapsulation of that. And I guess it's also got a lot of, you know, good lines for like when you're down at rock bottom. Like there's always like a little bon mot that you can take away from these movies that I feel like are useful in times where like you feel like life's shitting on you. Mm-hmm. You know, like they're full of the kind of stuff that they were talking about on Southpaw, you know, like the kind of bullshit you tell people, the you know, how you be successful. I just like it. I don't know. It's like a nice little rags. They're always like these rags, the riches stories. Usually the ones that they choose to make a biopic about have some kind of triumph, or they're cut down in their prime. So there's that kind of like, you know, they're like these eternally great things. And I thought all that came across. And you know, like the costuming was fun. It's Elton John's music. It's like the little kid they got to play him when they show him, like they have this thing at the end in the credits. I'm not sure if you watched it, but they show like, you know, Taron Egerton stomping around in his sequined L.A. Dodgers thing. And then they show Elton John from the same camera angle at the actual concert. He wore it. They did it a bunch, but they they showed the kid like turning around on his bench with the first time he played the piano in the movie. And there's a picture of Elton John at like 3 years old. And it's a fucking clone of him. Mm-hmm. It was like the casting's so good. And the kid also, the young Elton John can kind of belt as that he starts a Rocket Man. I thought that stuff was a lot of fun. You know, just the like him and his mom and his dad singing Elton John song about their feelings. And I just thought that stuff was really cool. And the fact that Elton John seemed like he had a hell of a life up until it got a little away from him. I thought that was really cool, too.
OK, I mean, yeah, I don't want to shit on this. Maybe I just wasn't in the headspace to watch this movie, but it didn't do much for me. I felt like a lot of it was rushed in a weird way. Like by the time that they were trying to make me just sympathize, but basically immediately in this movie, they want me to sympathize with this kid who's singing about how he just wants to be loved. I'm like, well, they haven't really earned this moment. They haven't earned any emotion from me yet, because all they've shown me is like his grandma being supportive of him while he's playing the piano. And that's essentially it. And his dad's a little standoffish. I didn't understand enough about his home life yet to understand why he would be so bummed out about it. But I don't know. I didn't think the musical parts were very inspired. In fact, I think I really disliked a lot of the recompositions and rearrangements they did of his music.
Wow. Okay. Are you a big Elton John fan? Because I can't say that I am.
Oh, yeah. I mean, not huge, but like for someone who was born in 82, probably I'm a decent Elton John fan. I would say like certainly his big stuff. I love it. I think it's great.
Okay.
Rocket Man and Benny and the Jets, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, I'm Still Standing, all that stuff. Fucking Circle of Life, all those things.
In the Air Tonight.
Yeah, I became an Elton John fan when Lion King came out, right?
I was trying to make a Phil Collins joke. Like, I was trying to see if I could piss off Elton John's fans by getting him.
Sure.
Yeah, but this thing is like, I like Elton John. I feel like I'm an Elton John fan the same way I'm a Billy Joel fan. Like, you know, the big piano man songs you can sing along to, you can belt out to. But I some of this catalog I was not familiar with. It's so weird we had the opposite reaction, because I thought the big musical numbers where like there's rapid costume changes and there's like this heightened magical reality of people floating around or him like inside of a giant hamster wheel spinning around, I thought that stuff was really cool. I thought the Rocket Man sequence was kind of a jaw dropper, a showstopper. But it's weird because like some of the stuff like the Rocketman sequence worked narratively against it, because I thought that was him hitting rock bottom. Mm-hmm. But maybe it was, because I guess that's the other thing I liked about the film is that
I don't think Rocketman is a uplifting song. I think Rocketman is a tragic song.
Yeah, and it's appropriate for your unloved child version of yourself to sing it to you at the bottom of the pool while you're probably dying of an alcohol and drugs overdose. Like, that's like not just rock bottom, you've gone subterranean. You're in the diving well of an in-ground pool. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't. It ended up like kicking off like a up phase of his career, but it was also a down phase. But like, that's what I was getting to. It's like, I actually thought that there's a lot of admirable things about him coming to grips with himself, learning to love himself, doing some little integrated family system style in therapy. I thought there was a lot of realistic that like, okay, I've got my shit together, but you don't really, you're going to fall. You're going to fuck up again.
That's the thing. I never felt that turn. I never felt the turn from like, he's resolved to not fuck up, but keeps fucking up, to like he's resolved to not fuck up and actually succeeds. The thing that they do is just give him the music video for I'm Still Standing at the end, and I'm like, okay,
but he did have and I guess that's where the magical realism, because I think you're supposed to understand the framing device of him stomping into a Alcoholics Anonymous session in his full like satanic Lolita outfit. Mm-hmm. As the stand-in for probably years of personal introspection and therapy.
I just wish I had seen more of that journey. It felt like a very abrupt turn from his down phase to his I'm okay with who I am now phase. I guess like that's what I identified early on in the movie. I was like, okay, this is going to be necessarily. I mean, Elton John is a character that invites the idea of I don't really know who I am because I'm playing a character on stage, right? And you can go this route with basically any rocker, but Elton John is very it can be like a very overt sort of thing with that.
He braces the theatricality of it all, sure.
Yeah, yeah. And who is he underneath? And I thought like that was going to be the theme, and it is. It definitely is. It just wasn't laid out in a way that I sort of saw all the dots connecting. It kind of shortcutted a lot of that stuff and undermined the emotional impact of it for me by the end. But maybe, like I said, maybe I just wasn't in the mood to watch it. I will say, Taron Egerton is 99% of the way to a perfect Elton John superstar singer. And I don't know if he's getting a lot of assist from, you know, voice effects and stuff, but holy shit, he is good in this.
Was a good singer. Like he's the voice behind the one of the gorillas in Sing, and he really can belt it out in that. So like he's got that. Huh. And I think a little bit of processing and a little bit of maybe layering the real Elton John behind there. He gets, and I thought he also sold, because that was my thing, is like, I don't think that Taron Egerton is a very close physical facsimile. Like when there's like some of the big outside, like big grin when he does that. But like physically, like he's a pretty hulking dude. And I was wondering like if he's going to be able to pull off that kind of, and he did, like the costuming helps, but like I think he did a really good job of acting as an extroverted introvert.
Yeah.
As someone who naturally is shy and kind of withdrawn, but because the demands of his lifestyle and who he wanted to be has forced to be this continually performing person. I thought he did really well with that stuff. He did really, like, some of the scenes with his mom and dad were great. And maybe that's one of the other reasons I gravitated toward this, because it's like, oh, wow, he's got a demanding, narcissistic mother and a remote, cold father. Gee, man, I wonder what that's like growing up. I felt like, I felt like I identified with a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
And broadly speaking, like, you know, I didn't come out of the closet, but like, you know, leaving the religion was felt very similar to that, where you have an internal realization about yourself that no one else knows about, and you're scared about letting it out. And, you know, it's a big moment, and you know, your family's going to be pissed, but you got to eventually rip it. Like all that stuff. I guess I kind of identified that stuff, too. And I get caught up like the scene where he is being forced to tell his mother that he's gay. And you know, he's all worked up about what it's going to mean to her and what's it's going to, you know, mean to their relationship, and it's going to break his mother's heart and blah blah blah, and he finally tells her, and she's accepting, right? Like, oh, I've always known that. And you get like you feel like it's going to be that kind of movie where it's like, oh, well, he's had this to worry about, but then she says like increasingly crueler and crueler and crueler things. Until she finally says, it's just a shame that you're never, ever, you know, like this choice you've made. It's never, you know, you're never going to be loved properly.
Mm-hmm. I assume because she thinks only a woman can love a man properly. Is that
because he's bucking nature and he's making a choice and he's doing this because he wants attention and like all the other shit that I at one point honestly believe, because that's what I was told about gay people. That's the other thing is like, I feel like the guys like Elton John really helped me understand, like break through the conditioning that I was gone to, that this was a choice, because I kept on seeing these people. And I was old enough to remember when Elton John got married to this woman and then he got a divorce a couple years later, because of course he did, and all the discussion around that. And I remember because like in the Witness culture, gay men, especially, I remember the illustrations of them, and like, you're thinking the illustrations of gay men. Why? What's in this? Yeah. Like some of our literature had like these what I would call worldly people montages. And it was always like in the 80s, it was always like an F4 Phantom streaking over about to drop a bomb. Mm-hmm. It was always a black kid with a swollen belly starving. It was someone putting a needle, a heroin needle in their arm. And it was always two sad, middle-aged, rundown gay men holding each other in a strip club, kissing. Probably on the cheek, because a full mouth kiss would be too much for the witness old ladies. And yeah. It's just this drab, sad. They're like, you know, everything was just like pathetic about them. And they're always illustrated that way. It's like, Jesus Christ, who would choose to do this? And guys like, you know, Elton John, there was like, it's like, I don't know, this probably seemed ridiculous. And it's a little Rick and Morty, but like, I started being aware of like, well, these, there's like, if the gayest gay person, and they're living their life and they seem like they're happy. And I'm like, the idea that someone would choose this is bizarre and crazy. Like, why would you? Why? That can't possibly be true. And then like somehow making that realization about the gayest of the gays helped me appreciate, well, if there's the gayest gay, there's probably got to be the least gay gay. And like what, like extrapolating their life experiences on that. And like what kind of, like it really kind of helped me appreciate like, this is not true. Like all this is like fucking crazy propaganda. And it all came back to like Elton John and his crazy fucking wigs and his crazy glasses. Yeah, I don't know. So like it was kind of when I saw him, like this dramatization of him like doing this in real life, like going and realizing that he was gay and what that meant and the family, like that stuff. I don't know. I thought it was really interesting. And
no, I like
really well portrayed.
That's the strongest part of the movie for me, is the way they treat his sexuality. It's not like some super secret thing amongst his closest friends. Like everybody, you know, kind of identifies that he's gay before he'll admit it. But then, you know, when they call him out on it, he's like, yeah, okay. And what if I were? And all of his friends accept it. And then he has the tough decisions to go talk with the people that maybe he shouldn't, but he does love, like his parents, and tell them when he knows that they're not going to be nearly as accepting as his friends. And then eventually, you know, he's got to come out to the world at large, things like that. I think that was probably the strongest part of this movie, for me at least, because it felt the realest and it felt the most like connecting the dots and making sense.
Yeah, and there's a great line towards the beginning of the film where he's just getting plugged into the rock and roll scene, where he's talking to, it turns out, another gay performer. And he's like, you've got to kill the person you were born to become the person that you want to be. And this is all in the context of like him being born as Reggie and wanting to be Elton Hercules John. But like he's like saying that, like, you know, eventually you've got to, you know, if you come from this world, like we're not, you're not, you're going to have to eventually decide that you're breaking some rules and you're ruffling some feathers. And you got to, you can't like straddle, you know, Reginald and Elton. You kind of got to devote to Elton. And the rest of the movie is about the pain that I guess Elton John did to himself and others. Like there was like, I felt like it was a little bit, that's the, where the movie, I felt rushed to me, the relationship he had with Renate.
Yeah. The landlord at their.
Oh, well, that I'm talking about something. The one we had with the producer, the music producer.
Oh yeah. Where he got married. Yeah.
And I read an interview, a recent one, like it was from 2019, 2020, where people were asking him about that. And, you know, like the idea that, you know, someone loved him unconditionally and he loved them so much. And because he's trying to deny, like this last final time, deny the reality of who he is, he caused like so much pain to himself and these other people he cared about. Like that was something maybe the movie could have leaned in a little bit, because that's profound and a, like an experience that like a lot of people can't probably have and understand. And it felt both him like kind of, I guess it felt like he was using her as a life preserver, right? His whole life is kind of like swirling down and he was kind of making a clean break with everyone that knew that part about him. And fuck, why not? Why not try the heterosexual lane again? I thought that, yeah, I want a little bit more. I felt like the movie needed a couple more moments to make some of that stuff work, because it felt like, well, what the fuck is that? Yeah, at that point in the movie, him getting married felt weird. But yeah, maybe it felt weird to him at the time too. It seems like
I'm sure it did. They bring it back around too, I think, by the end of this movie, where he's in this group meeting and they like, he starts talking to his parents. He starts talking to all the people in his life from before about who he is. And then he eventually says like, I know exactly who I am. I'm Elton John, right? I'm not that kid, but I can still like get down and hug that kid. I can still like appreciate that I once was that kid. But now he's much more like he is Elton John. He always has been Elton John. It's just that's the like get rid of the person you were born to be, right? Which is Reginald Dwight or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And become the person that you want to be. And I think by the end of the movie, he's done that. And I felt that moment. I thought that was a nice moment.
You talk about that scene about him hugging his younger self. And I thought that was really, I thought that was a really touching scene. And it's also, there's this concept in therapy called integrated family systems. And it's an idea of like, usually a lot of the trauma we experience happens because we're young people and we didn't have the appropriate coping mechanisms and life experiences to understand that, like, you know, this is just one person yelling at you. When you're a kid and you're being yelled at or neglected by your parent, it's like your entire world doing this to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as a result of that, you know, we develop these unhelpful and unhealthy coping mechanisms because we just came up with them when we're 6 and 7. We kind of still, when things get bad, we lean on those things. And integrated family systems is a way to, like, you can have conversations with your father, you have conversations with your 6-year-old self, because a lot of times we carry, you know, your dad will say something like, stop crying, be a man, you got to tough this out. And instead of like stopping, being like, is this good advice in this moment? Should I be crying? Am I right to be sad? Is this a shitty situation that maybe I need some sympathy? You just internalize that, right? And a lot of times you will continue to like be your dad to that little child, that part of you inside of you. You'll like, you know, like, why can't you get it together? Why can't you do this? Why? And it's just this like perpetuates a shame cycle to be able to go back and be like metaphorically take that 6-year-old version of yourself and be like, man, little man, you had a bad, bad start and you did the best you could with what you knew, which wasn't much. And you should add a lot more help and you didn't. And I'm sorry that people made you feel that way. And I don't feel that way about you. And I forgive you. And I'm going to stop perpetuating abuse. It seems silly, but it actually can feel very liberating. And had that conversation with your father, too. It's like, you let me down and you weren't there for when you need me. But like, when I think about the way you were raised and the time that you lived in, you probably did the best you could with what you had. And I'm not mad at you anymore for that. Like, you're just as that stuff is incredibly liberating. And sometimes and can be effective. And I thought that the picture did a pretty good job of fictionalizing what that looks like. You know, it's like that's not how it looks like in a therapeutic sense, but like that kind of being able to like at the end where he's like, I can't get better with this guilt and the shame. And I got to forgive everybody, not just me, but dad. Like, you know, people are like, well, and every time people would come in, like, well, you're just that. And he'd be like, OK, well, maybe, but I'm happy to be that. When his mom tries to blame his dad, nah, you can't do that. Like that just kind of truth and reconciliation of your whole, like, it's just powerful. And I thought it was very moving and extremely well done in the movie.
Yeah, no, I agree. The ending of this movie is pretty good. I just didn't feel like all of the journey connected. Some of the songs I think are strange in context, like especially the early on stuff. Like I already talked about how I didn't quite feel, I didn't feel the love tonight when he was singing that song about, I just want to be loved. But then there's the Saturday night fighting sequence
montage,
which is him as like a 12-year-old. Is the movie, I guess this is like anachronistic kind of thing where a 12-year-old is singing about what Saturday nights are for. I don't know about you, but when I was 12 years old, Saturday nights were not for fighting. Saturday nights were not for anything but like video games and Mountain Dew.
But did you live in a rough part of London that, like, you know, that's the thing. Like, I think you're supposed to understand that Elton John was sneaking out as like a 13-14-year-old and playing dive bars and shit. He was going out with his Ivy League music career and his slick back rockabilly hair. And he was like, you know, doing this low rent bar shit as a way to kind of build his chops and stuff. Again, I wish
Elton John could have written some original music for this, for that moment, because I was thinking Saturday Night Fighting certainly couldn't be a song he wrote that early.
And also smoothly transitions, like it's supposed to like get you through like, OK, Elton John at 13 at his music conservatory and graduating, because by the end of it, the camera pans around 180. And oh, look at here.
It's Taron Egerton,
no longer Jonathan Lipnicki Elton. It's now Taron Elton. And look at him. He's super attractive and young, and he's checking out all the guys. But yeah, and it's like, that's the thing with the jukebox musicals is sometimes, like, Mamma Mia, for example, if you're just limiting yourself to the ABBA catalog, and you got a 2-hour movie, you got to tell a plot, you're going to have some reaches, you know, some things that,
yeah, I definitely
work at
the
lyrical
the
level, but
this.
Not the musical level. Or they might work at the musical emotional level, but not strictly the lyrical level. But yeah, that's just the way they go.
Yeah, I was feeling the reaches, and those might have put me off early going in this movie, because there are several of them.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah, well. Lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content plus ad-free feeds.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what 2-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
There's a couple things I also had noticed that, like, you know, Robb Stark, when he comes up and he's seen his first this transcendent bar show that he puts on where everybody starts levitating when he's singing as Crocodile Rock. Right.
Yeah. That was a cool scene.
You know, like that rare ability for a performer to just really captivate a whole room. And he gives this speech about how, like, you know, I like the song, but I love the artist and you've got this thing you got it, and it's only you and blah, blah. Like, I found myself as a newly minted 45-year-old watching that, getting embarrassed. Like, who but a young person falls for this kind of, like, bullshit and flattery? And I immediately had a negative opinion of Robb Stark here. And it turns out, yeah, he is this kind of a person that uses and abuses people.
Yeah.
I thought some of that stuff is... I guess that's also the thing I like about biopics, is there are also usually great things to, like, talk about. You know, if you got kids, like, hey, look at these patterns and these relationships, and, like, are you aware of patterns like that? And I don't know, like, if you can be that directive with kids, but, like, it just allows you to see these situations before you'd even get them, and, like, see, like, oh, this is what it feels like when someone, like, is abusing you, and make it seem like it's your fault, and all that. I thought that was stuff was good too. I know it was important to Elton. I read a bunch of interviews where he wanted to like fairly portray the dark parts of his life, the things that he wishes he could do better, and the times where he felt like he wishes he could stand up for himself. Or, and you know, he also is very cruel to his best friend.
I was gonna say the number one scene that sticks out to me is where his friend says he's going home, and he invites him back to the ranch to just write some music like the old days, and Elton curses him.
Yeah, like I feel like in I don't know, biopics are there's always this line they run between making friends like this seem like wet blankets that are stopping the fun versus like, you know, people throwing out lifelines and doing interventions. Mm-hmm. I felt like this it did a really good job of showing what that looked like, because Elton is going to say, well, this is a time you're abandoning me. That's not what he said. He's like, I need a break. I need to find myself, and I want you to come with me. Mm-hmm. I want you to come out to my ranch, and I want us to write music together like we did when we were teenagers. And Elton John just spits in his fucking face and then turns around and says, well, that was you abandoning me again. I thought that. And then like,
and when I don't even think it was just, you know, he needed a break. I think he identified that Elton needed a break too.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. For sure. And then I thought it was also great when they later reconciled, you know, like, Elton didn't have to, cause like sometimes in these movies, like the person has to have this like giant, like self-flagellation, apology and like, you know, but like a true friend's like, I can see you've made changes and you're being a different person. And like, there's someone also, it's like, you know, Elton was like, oh, everybody hates me. He's like, no one fucking hates you. You know, you've just been an asshole and you're being self-destructive. And if you stop all that, then people will start loving you again. Like, I thought that like the movie, I don't know, there's something about like the dysfunction, but also the healthy responses to it. And I don't know if this is Elton coming back and rewriting history and being like, oh, if I, you know, this is how I would as a confident, mature man deal with all these situations. But that's the kind of you got across like. Mm-hmm. The other thing I like about these biopics is they show, you know, a lot of times you're told as a kid, well, you got to keep your nose clean and you got to work hard and you don't get mixed up with drugs and alcohol and fall into the wrong companions. But what if you do? Because they don't give you like, it's all about like what not to do. But what if you do the shit that you shouldn't do and it bites you in the ass and you're trying to get back? There's not like a lot of roadmaps that, and like these usually have those kind of things. Like if you shit on your friends and your family, how can you get back? Or maybe some of your friends and family weren't friends and family to begin with, and you're well shot of them. Mm-hmm. Like, I like that stuff about this movie too.
Yeah, that's the thing that kind of tore me up about the scene with his dad years later, where he goes back and he's trying to come out to him, and his dad, like, he doesn't end up doing it because he sees that his dad has just always hated him. Like, there's something about him that his dad has always resented, and it might be that he like thought he was gay from a young age, and I don't know that Elton at that point wants to give him anything of himself anymore. You know, he walks out the door and he's very angry. You know, he goes into a self-destructive pattern at that point, especially after he has to tell his mom also, and that goes bad. But yeah, just like the way the movie doesn't tell you what he's thinking in that scene, it just shows you that he clearly loves his two new kids, and you know, we remember the relationship he had with his father before. It's a pretty powerful scene.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know, because I got a little bit of maybe his dad was gay secretly in his
maybe
youth.
The movie
some
does
of that
not
stuff the way when they're like, I just there, want someone, but I want someone to love me, like they included his dad in that. And there's I couldn't tell if there, because there's an open reading, which is he's got the sons that he wants now.
Yeah.
And he's fully invested in his family, and look at him like, you know, he's hugging these kids because he's not afraid of them being soft and turning gay.
Yeah.
There's that. But there's also a reading that like, what if his dad is also deeply closeted and it didn't work out? But he, instead of, you know, once he got free, instead of like finding the love of his life, he's doubled down. Mm-hmm. And doing this, and like that is sad too. I mean, it was tough.
So
for me to
so
say.
It's less anger and more pity, or both. You know, it
but, yeah,
both.
Like the fact that like you're doing this again because you're probably going to disappoint these. Because like I got the other idea that like he's going overboard. Like that kid that he picked up and kissed on the cheek is like 13 years old.
Yeah.
Maybe they cast a too old guy, but like, I don't know. Like, it's at some point you don't. Whatever. That like he's trying a little too hard to be this kind of dad. I don't know. But it was also just like, yeah, the punch in the gut of like, you know, it was such a weird scene with his dad, man. His dad acknowledging his success, and even that his boys are kind of in, you know, kind of idolizing him, and he's going to write, you know, get an autograph, but it's to give away to some guy who's into him because he's personally not to his taste.
Yeah.
Jesus, what a fucking punch in the gut.
Sure.
And then like the mom is like broadly speaking more supportive. That's why maybe it's felt like a bigger betrayal when she says all that shit about him. And then later on when they have a confrontation at a restaurant where she says that you're good for nothing and you've not had to work a day in your life and it's so embarrassing and you're such a disappointment being your mother. Like, how can you say that? I'll never understand how you can have a child like Elton John. And even if you don't get it, how can you not be transcendently happy that they're doing so well and getting so much respect and meaning so much in the lives of so many people? Like, even if you just don't get it at all,
like, and how can you not see what they do as work? Like, yes, I get
that's the
okay.
Other
he
thing.
Has talent, so you don't consider applied talent to be work.
Elton John's life seems like a lot of work.
Ass off, yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
I mean, he's touring. Like, if you know anything about touring, it's just constant.
He's in the middle of a 3-year-long farewell tour right now. He's been doing through the pandemic 80, at 72 or 73 or whatever. That's good stuff, too, like, because I know that's a lot of artists, especially, you know, artists that get this kind of exposure and acclaim. Like, that's always like, oh, they don't even have real jobs, you know. Right.
Because you only see them performing for an hour and a half on stage 5 days a week or whatever. You don't see all the work that goes into it behind the scenes. How long do you think it takes him to get into one of those fucking get-ups?
Oh, 100%. This dialogue has been relevant recently in the like the OnlyFans kind of like collapse and banning of pornography and walking it back, because there's a lot of like, oh, they'll have to get real jobs now. If you're like a top 1% girl on OnlyFans, you are working your ass off. Not just like maintaining your body and coming up with the content, but dealing with everyone's fucking bullshit that you get from them being in that position. Oh my God, that's
designing marketing campaigns. There's a lot of shit that goes into that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just like taking a couple lazy pics with the cell phone and posting it on, like, not at that level. It's not. And like, yeah, if you're making your livelihood from you definitely got Delta. Some genetic gifts, some talent, but like you had the work to fucking exploit that. Obviously.
Sure. And Elton John could play a mean piano even when he was 3. That's the depiction. It's interesting to me how they depicted Elton John's talent, because early on in the movie, they depict it as he simply has a very good ear and an extremely good memory. But somewhere in the middle of that movie that it just goes away, right? Like, okay, now he's a great composer. Now he, and I don't know when the turning point is, because he gets the scholarship, to the musical school, and then it just kind of goes away. He just starts composing original music instead of copying what he's heard.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that just shows the difference between like a 8-9-year-old and a 20-year-old, but like I felt like they told,
and it,
like,
shows the effect of the schooling. I guess.
Yeah, and I didn't know this, but I thought, because she's like, okay, well, you can do this. Let's now go back to basics, teach you theory and all that. But I got the idea that he's almost like a Mozart level genius.
Yeah,
because that's like essentially Mozart. And then he turns into a world class composer. Well, of course he does, but he doesn't have the lyrics. Like, I thought that was interesting. That like this guy could just write. You know, he's bust that candle in the wind early on. And you're like, oh, what is that? I don't know. I just came up with it. Like, does he be able to write a hook like that? That's insane. And I also thought like this lifelong relationship that he had with his Bernie character, his songwriter. It's kind of amazing on the other side of that to be able to just like write all those crazy songs about such diverse topics and like big love songs and ballads and rock and roll and novelty songs and all that stuff. And just like the Right, hit after, like, it's kind of like the perfect fusion of these two talents.
Yeah, I can't quite understand what it's like to write a song without hearing the music in your head. Because when I think of writing songs, I think of the melody, you know, fusing with the lyrics into some distillation of a song. And it doesn't seem like that happened here, right? That was Elton John's job. He just wrote lyrics that were catchy, but how did he know if they were catchy without a melody? Because a melody is what makes those lyrics mostly catchy.
Yeah, he probably had something like a dee 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 dee. But that's a far cry from like adding, you know, guitar and piano and drums and like finding. Yeah,
I'm sure he had like a cadence to the lyrics in his head, but you know, certainly not notes or anything.
I guess it's like essentially you're writing poetry, which has its own kind of like rhythms and stuff. And then someone goes and sets music to it. That's what I'm saying. Like it's because I feel like I can't write music to save my fucking life, but I can like write poems and stuff like that. So I saw. But the idea that you're doing 40 a year or some crazy shit like that is.
Yeah,
the output that these guys had in the 60s and 70s is just insane.
When his manager is like, oh yeah, I got you a 3-album deal a year, and they're like, 3 albums a year, are you fucking
and
insane?
You're also gonna be the permanent house band that's never worked a day in his life. Jesus,
why would anybody release 3 albums a year? I can't, like, who wants that? I wouldn't want my favorite band to release 3 albums a year. That's stupid.
A lot to keep up with. It is crazy.
Who wants somebody to release 8 podcasts in a week? That's insane.
I was about to pivot to that. It's like, haven't we, like, we've had conversations like, okay, you're the craziest Bald Move fan in the world. How many hours of podcasts are you listening to this week?
Right.
Like, are we fucking ourselves? Yeah, no. It did feel a little bit like, that's the thing is, like, I felt like they set up Al Capone to be the prototypical bad manager who's exploiting, but it seemed like Richard Madden. Is it Madsen? Rob Stark.
Yeah,
Richard Madden.
Madsen.
It seemed like he was the bad manager that really, I mean, he definitely took it more serious and got him a lot more money, but goddamn, he's abusive.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of Jimmy Fallon in Almost Famous, except we didn't get to see how abusive he would be necessarily.
Right.
We just saw he's the asshole you need to get to the next level because he can put together the deals. He's not going to force you into 3 albums in a year, but he is going to get you played at whatever bar it is, whatever theater it is.
I was trying to think
LA.
Of what it was called. Yeah, the little folk thing that apparently Bob Dylan and Neil Diamond and the Beach Boys all hung out at. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to talk about some of the things because you said that, there wasn't a lot of fun or like crazy visuals and stuff or something. I want to talk about the things I did think stood out.
Okay.
Like I said, that scene with the levitating crowd of the Crocodile Rock, I thought that was amazing and cool. I thought the Pinball Wizard, which I'd never heard him sing before, that montage of him like doing all the crazy outfits and the arena rock and all that stuff, I thought that was really great too. It wasn't anything special. It was just like a lot of blur cuts from, you know, stage to stage to stage, outfit to outfit to outfit. But it like gave you an idea of like the showmanship. And they also had, like, there's a cut of his mom watching Liberace, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
Cause that's like,
at that point, you should have known she knew he was gay, right?
right. But like that's the thing that age, like Liberace was kind of
he was in the closet too,
deeply closeted. Like, you know, people said women loved him. Mm-hmm. It's such an interesting analog for him. I thought the Rocket Man sequence from him, like, you know, starting off like just like an announcement, I'm now going to try to fucking kill myself. Jump in the pool. And then down at the deep end is a little boy version of himself in a spaceman suit that's also a dive bell at a little toy piano harpsichord. And he starts playing Rocket Man as he sinks to the literal bottom.
What is fun about that?
It's not fun.
I mean,
it was just
visually
amazing.
Interesting, but there's no fun. Every bit of fun in this movie, with the exception of that Crocodile Rock sequence, is tinged with tragedy. Like every bit of it, I can't think of a single bit where it's not like, oh, he's actively self-destructing here. He's putting on the brave face when he goes out in his fucking peacock mohawk and plays an amazing show.
Well, I didn't say this part was fun. I said it was visually interesting and kind of like jaw dropping from a visual standpoint.
It is that. Yeah, it's very cool.
And then, like, you know, I thought it's like, OK, well, this is like what rock bottom is. But it ends, you know, like then there's like him looking up. And I think what you're understanding is Guest diving in to try to save him, become like a synchronized swimming ship.
Yeah.
And all that shit was great. And then he literally turns into Rocket Man and blasts off and explodes like a firework as a plane goes over. And then it smash cuts to him in his seat, like with smoke coming off his head, like he was the fire. So you're thinking like, oh, this is about him like confronting his demons and pulling out of it. But then you realize, no, he's just on and up. Like, this is just a cycle further down the spiral.
Yeah, I mean, it's Rocket Man, right? It's his career is taking off, but it's burning him out from both ends here.
That was a fucking great, I thought that was a great match of song to visual medium to the point of the movie, which is kind of fun. Like, I don't know, like the experience of a movie working, it feels fun to me.
Sure. Maybe.
Yeah. Those are the two ones that I thought like really gave me, and I actually like the Saturday Nights Are Made For are for Fighting, because
I just didn't like the musical arrangement. There, I felt like it was too deconstructed or something. It's not, it doesn't rock nearly as hard as that Saturday Night song does when he sings it.
Yeah.
And it's not for lack of trying. Like, Taron Egerton, like I said, is almost a perfect facsimile in terms of his voice of Elton John. It's so damn close. I don't think the composition supports him here. I think what they did rearranging his music dulls it. For the most part, I think there are some exceptions.
Well, he's not Elton John, you know, but
he's damn close.
He is.
It's not his fault that these things don't work for me.
And the visual, like I said, that scene where there's a scene I really like, too, where Elton John is being forced to do his song, or, you know, like whereas life is at a low ebb and clearly he doesn't feel like getting up onto the stage. And he's depressed and his love of his life has left him, and he grabs a pile of coke and he does a snort, and then you can kind of see him like trying on the Elton John, like the big megawatt smile with the headdress he's got on, and like trying to work himself up into being Elton John. He really sold that he was Elton John at that moment.
Yeah,
like he's got something in that, like, I don't, did they do any like a dental appliance to make him really, or it is like, because I think we talked about this in The Kingsman 2, like, he's got a pretty passing similarity to, he's got this the energy and facial structure and like tooth structure of Elton John.
Yeah,
but he really fucking nailed it.
That's something they did.
All the preening and the vamping.
Yeah,
it was just like, looked like vintage Elton John. It's like, again, they do the thing at the end where they show like the actual photo and then Taron doing it, and he just killed it. So cool.
Gotcha. I miss that stuff. So we would be remiss not to talk about this in context of Bohemian Rhapsody, I think, because they came out at almost the exact same time. And you mentioning the tooth appliance is kind of like triggering me to talk about this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, clearly they were doing something with Rami Malek's teeth in that movie, right? They gave him an appliance to mimic Freddie Mercury's fucked up jaw, whatever he's got. That enabled him to sing so well, apparently. What would you say to someone who was trying to compare these two movies? Do you have a preference for Bohemian Rhapsody versus Rocket Man?
That's a good question, because the only thing I remember being bummed about, the Bohemian Rhapsody, is I thought it was a pretty factual telling of the story, and to find out that it was really fabulized and kind of in a self-serving way by the surviving band members. And so that takes a little bit away from me, like, you know, in subsequent, but it was a lot of fun to watch. It was a lot of fun. And Rami was really a lot of fun as Freddie Mercury. But like, knowing that the subject of this was alive and kind of blessed it and guided it and was happy with how it turned out, And also the fact that he's like not saying that, hey, this is not strictly speaking a 100% true. This is a myth. This is a lightly mythologized version of my real life. I don't know. Like something about the movie saying that, like, yeah, this is a little bit rose colored and it feels appropriate to Elton John that it is. And the fact that he's here to protect his legacy. I don't know. Something about like, because I remember like walking out of Bohemian Rhapsody, really liking it.
Yeah.
And then I liked it less the more I thought about it and the more I read about, you know, the kind of real history of Queen. And this, I don't know, like, how would I like, it feels like everybody, like, it's, he's still collaborating with this guy, the, you know, like, who's going to come out and say that, oh, actually Elton John made up a whole bunch of bullshit, you know, he's still on speaking terms with his ex-wife, you know, he's got a new husband, beautiful children, like, I don't know. I guess I like this better, unironically.
Okay. I don't like this as much. I think, yeah, for me, the Bohemian Rhapsody movie was a lot more fun. I don't really care if a biopic is like super accurate. As long as it nails like the themes of people's lives, I don't know. I'm not like a stickler for that stuff. So
yeah, I can see that. Who do you think was better in the movie? Rami as Freddie or Taron as Elton?
Jeez. That's a hard question to answer. They're both so good.
They really are perfectly casted.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't think I can give either of them a one up over the other. They're both so good. And yeah. I was shocked by their abilities in both cases.
And then what else we want to talk about?
Do you have a favorite Elton John song? I know you're not like a super fan or anything, but
I think Saturday Night, or I guess what it's the, I guess that's why they call it the blues. Okay. I really like that's a great breakup song, you know?
Yeah.
Like with a little bit of distance to see the good. I like that. That's a beautiful song. What about you?
I think it's definitely Benny and the Jets. That song is so much fun. It's like, I don't know. They played in this movie as almost like a disco era song for him. And I think that's what it was. But also, man, it's just, yeah, it's a ton of fun. Anytime that song comes on the radio, I love it. What's the one from Almost Famous? Tiny Dancer. I mean, Tiny Dancer is a classic, right?
Tiny Dancer is great. Yeah. I've been singing that on the Twitch stream.
Right.
Four or five times. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one that'll get stuck in your head for sure. So one of those two.
Well, Rocket Man, I'm glad we got to catch up to it. It's one that I felt like got away from us in 2019 because that was a crazy end of the year. But I'm glad we got to see it. I liked it a lot. But I can also see the problems you have with it, too. Yeah, it's still, though, a great, I think, just the fact that it's a jukebox Elton John movie with a lot of his biggest and most famous hits, and the fact that Taron kills it, it elevates the material to me. And you learn a little bit about, you know, dealing with trauma and family problems and, you know, the message of forgiving yourself as the first step is to better things is a good one to be taught to people. So. All right, well, that's it. That's our thoughts on Rocket Man. I hope you guys enjoyed it, and I hope you will come back next week for our next prestige film that we'll be talking about here on the Bald Move Prestige feed. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.